Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.
Let's get underway.
Saturdays were made for this. The biggest names and the biggest games right here.
Triple M rocks the NRL.
To our mates at King G, welcome to the Triple M Saturday Scrum.
Yes, lovely to have your company on this beautiful Saturday afternoon, wherever you are listening to us from. Hope you're having a great weekend so far. Hope your footy team has got up and had a win, or you're looking forward to that happening sometime over the next couple of days. What a terrific 3 hours we have to share with you. Before we do anything, I just want to welcome to the microphone. Reedy's not here today, as you know. But Michael Chambers from the Sydney Morning Herald joins us and the Nine Network. Welcome, my friend.
Tony, it's an honour. Reedy's given me the phone call before the match. He's got some advice for me, actually. I'll share it a little bit later with you.
Really? Okay.
Don't listen to him, mate. Don't listen to Reedy.
Mark Guy, did you give Michael any advice at all pre-game?
Just a good early hit up.
Yes.
Get an early touch. Get involved. Don't be shy. And just come off your wing and do the hit-ups.
Oh, you put him on the wing, are you?
You might move to the centres, depending on his performances.
Good.
Hey, Tone. Hey, everyone. Welcome, Michael. It's nice to have you on board. It's nice to have someone that actually wants to turn up on a weekly basis and actually finds it important to have a job. It's like musical chairs, this place. Every week we have someone new in the chair. Hopefully someone wants to turn up every week consistently, and they might find themselves in a role.
You know what?
You like the moving
parts, don't
you?
I do kind of like that chair to be a rotating chair because, with MG, with yourself and with me here, that kind of, we've got that solid base, like the spine, if you like.
We've got the front row.
The front row, okay. Yeah. I'll go with front row.
That's exactly what you want to hear. Yeah, you're here for 1 week, mate, then move on after that.
Yeah, not nice, is it?
No.
We say that at the end of the show, Tony. We don't say it at the start of the show.
No, if Michael excels, then
one of us
Reedy's dead to me.
Oh, okay.
You see what I'm
Reedy
saying?
Is okay. Gotcha.
Reedy is all dead right to me. What? Because he's chosen today, to be playing football?
No, his kids are playing football this morning. And because he's got this, he calls them the under-11s Barca of the Northern Beaches, Barcelona, that is.
Yeah.
They lost last week for the first time in like 9 years. So he felt it important that this week
he would
go and watch their game.
Frankly, I don't care. My daughter played netball this morning. Yeah. My son, who I had to get out of a tree at school yesterday, is playing football this afternoon.
Did you use a slingshot? That's how I get things out of trees.
I just used careful words.
I bet.
Is all I use.
Get in off that tree.
Exactly.
You get the chainsaw out?
I love you, Harry. I didn't know. So looking at that Tyre Power scoreboard, the games of footy that have already gone before us this weekend, and the Broncos and the Titans, what a ridiculous game of rugby league that was. Exciting and weird and wonderful. We're going to get to it in more detail very, very shortly. 36-28, the Broncos over the Titans. The Broncos were, honestly, 22-0. They weren't just dead and buried. They were dead. They've been cremated. Their ashes had been sprinkled along Caxton Street, and yet they came back and won that game.
Dearly beloved.
Don't you reckon? Unbelievable. In the words of Paul Keating, Brisbane were like Lazarus with the triple bypass. They were absolutely gone. 22-0 down after 15 minutes. They came back and beat the Titans 36-28. I'm not sure Kevy cracked a smile at all, even towards the end of the game when this happened.
High swirling kick. Azago took the ball, slipped over, picked it up on his 10th. Beat the first, opened up. Now he's up over the 30. He's on the 40. He finds Gamble. Gamble puts the burners on. Finds a blade. Coates.
Where
did he go? Sami chasing. Scores. Great try, Brisbane. What a game of rugby league. You gotta love it.
What a game of rugby league indeed. It was weird. It was ridiculous, Michael Chambers.
It was. And at 22-0, I was fearing what Kevy Walters was going to do after the game. Given what he did last week, you started to think he's going to have to rip the joint apart and start again, which they're trying to do. Unfortunately, they're hamstrung at the moment, but they got back in the game. And the Titans, some serious concerns. That's 2 weeks in a row now. They've butchered a good lead in South Sydney the week before. You see a top eight team in the Titans, and then they dish out a second half like that.
Yeah. They've got some incredible athletes, the Broncos, and I think that's what everyone looks at over the last couple of years when we sort of watch them on this, you know, go on this spiral, on this journey to the bottom of the table. But when you look at some of the performances of some of the individuals in those moments, you know, where what Pangai Jr. needs a target every week. You put him up against Fifita and you put him up against Kikau, two of the best sort of left back rowers in the competition, and he performs.
Yep.
But if there's nothing in him for that week, it's like he's disinterested and he doesn't have the same sort of performance. But, you know, Coates on the wing, you've got Osaka at the back. I mean, they can do some brilliant things as they did last night, but need to work on their starts a little, Tone, fair
yeah,
to say.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Jermaine Osaka, his start of the game wasn't good for him at all. I think in commentary, Dan Ganane might have said, will they hook him? after about 10 minutes or 15 minutes, suddenly he turned around. He is a brilliant athlete. MG, what did you make of it?
Yeah, well, he was, Tone. He let the first three tries in, then he scored two and set up one. So he had a mixed game. But I just thought that, with the arrival of Dave Donaghy from Melbourne. I know he didn't physically have any input onto the performance last night, but when a big dog comes in town, everyone's on notice. And Kevy's had a blindfold on for the last 3 months of being in Brisbane as the head coach. He's got a right-hand man he can confide in. He can get confidence out of who he wants to pursue. And as we just learned that maybe Reynolds is going up there to talk to them. So all of a sudden, that this the fortunes of Brisbane change when a CEO, his elk, hits town. And I love the performance last night of all the Broncos. The Titans started like they were grand final favourites in the first 15, 20 minutes, but then they're kind of getting that reputation now as the faders, and that's not a good reputation to have. This is a team we all thought would make the eight for sure this year with the personnel they recruited, but I'm thinking the other end. I'm thinking they're going to be the big sliders. They're at the moment, they're the big pretenders of the competition, if anything.
They've lost 14-0 leads and above quite a bit, haven't they?
Yeah.
I want to get to them in a second, because it was, in fact, I think, in the club's history, the best comeback for the Broncos.
But touching on what MG said, you know, you got to think about the situation Kevy found himself in. He obviously...
I think you might have turned your microphone off in your excitement.
I was excited, Tony. But the microphone's not that low, to be honest. He found himself in a situation where he's taken over a roster that has just won the Wooden Spoon for the first time in the club's history. He comes into that organisation under a hell of a lot of pressure, and he's got no one to get in the trenches with him because they didn't have a CEO. So the first thing you probably do as a new coach coming into a place like that is just look at your recruitment and your retention, and over the last couple of years, where's it at and what's the plan moving forward? And if there's not one there clear in front of you that's been laid by someone that really understands the business, what are you making decisions based on? Who you think's a good player? You don't probably know who's coming through. So as MG said, to have someone now to saddle up to in the trenches, understanding the financial aspect of it with a really good business acumen, where he's done a great job in Melbourne, and then going, right, rubbing some hands together, it affects the whole organisation. And it didn't directly impact the result last night, but I can imagine even Kevy, and as Mick said, you know, would have been nervous after 20 minutes. But I'm sure over the last couple of days, knowing that he's going to have someone with him next to him starting today to go out and recruit and fill some of those holes would have just given him a lot of hope.
I want to get to the Adam Reynolds and where they are in just a minute. But what about the kid who played in the number 7 last night, Tyson Gamble? He is a big halfback. He seemed to be barking orders, so he seemed to be doing that controlling thing.
I like the
thing,
fact that he was
good.
Full of emotion.
In. Yeah, yeah.
He was aggressive.
Yeah,
you know, he's a guy that's been up there in the Brisbane system for a while. Skill set probably too hard to tell. Looks like he's got the fundamentals down, decent kicking game, but they just needed someone to go out there and scrap, and he's a scrapper.
I like the fact that he kicked early. I mean, he just showed a lot of confidence anyway, MJ.
Well, that's a perfect example of taking your opportunity and running with it. This guy's, you know, he's been a... and Mick will tell us more about him. Chomo, bit of a journeyman. He's played, I think, West Tigers junior. He went up, as Gerd's alluded to, he's played in the Brisbane, lower grades for a couple of seasons. But I've always thought he's had some ability. When I saw him play for the Tigers, I like big body 5'8s. And I think that's the way the game's going. And last night, he played like he'd been there for 3 or 4 years. I love the fact that he just said, you know what, this is probably my last opportunity. I'm going to take it with both hands. And he played fantastically.
In all seriousness, though, like, we talk about the roster and what Kevy's inherited. Is it that bad of a roster? Like, if you talk about someone like the West Tigers, there's 6 or 7 guys in that football team that they would take from the Brisbane Broncos in a heartbeat. Like, you've got Jermaine Osaka, Xavier Coates, Pangai Jr., Payne Haas. Like,
good point.
Even
good
Anthony
point.
Milford. Like, I know we're making, you know, excuses for Kevy, and he obviously deserves time to turn it around, but there's some good players in that football team. I just think they're not a wooden spoon side. I know he's going to give him some time.
I think the key positions, though, Mick, if you look at some of the decisions made, and Reece Walsh, for instance, like, so he's a guy coming through that organisation that looks like he can play one, which is an area Now, I'm not sure whether Osako is a long-term solution at one for them, or whether or not they believe that he could push out on the wing and still do a pretty good job and bring someone in there that can play out the back of shape, which is, you know, what pretty important these days. And Walsh, in the game that I saw him play for the Warriors on debut last week, showed me that he's can create opportunities for other people. He's a smart guy. He's got a good kicking game. Now, if you look at the 7 and the 6 for the Broncos over the last couple of years, they're the exact traits that they've really lacked. So how do you as a club, and I'm not sure whether it was a financial decision, let a guy like Reece Walsh walk out of the club?
Well, look at the hole they're in now, right? And they still need a 7 and a 6 and potentially a 9 or and a 1, as you said. And they were going to pay $1 million for David Fifita. Imagine the hole they'd be in right now if they actually kept David Fifita. So I just don't know if the recruitment and the strategy going forward over the last 18 months has been any thought behind
it. But all the players that you mentioned that other clubs would love to have, none of them are in those key positions.
No.
And that's the problem. Their salary cap's out of whack because they've signed, they've spent the big money on wrong positions.
You talk about recruitment.
They need to make up for it somehow.
And obviously the big name that they've been talking about is Adam Reynolds, and I don't know why you put a headline in the paper saying, you know, secret talks. If it's in the paper, it's not a secret, really.
Nothing secret, nothing baby.
Nothing secret. But that's supposed to be happening today between the Broncos. Is it Kevy coming down as well as the CEO? What's happening?
It sounds like Kevy's come down to meet with Adam Reynolds today. Now, the way it is at the moment, I think Cronulla are still in the box seat. There's an offer there for the 3-year deal at Cronulla. It's worth about $750 with some incentives for Adam Reynolds if he goes and performs at the Sharks. Now, no doubt Kevy needs an experienced number 7, so they're hoping they can turn things around. They want to meet with Mitchell Moses as well tomorrow. He plays today, Mitchell, for the Eels against the Dogs, so they'll also meet with Mitchell. And from my understanding, not sure, haven't been able to confirm this, but there's talk that Sean Johnson might be heading up to meet with Donahue, who's still in Brisbane today. So they're the three guys in line for the Broncos 7. I don't think Mitchell Moses goes. I don't think Adam Reynolds goes. And Sean Johnson, I love Sean Johnson as a player, but does Sean Johnson fix the problem they have at the moment?
It depends on the price, I think, for these guys as well and how much they spend. We just spoke about how lopsided their salary cap is at the moment. They need to make sure that, you know, their next couple of purchases are people not just for the right positions with the right attitude, but for the right price. They can't overspend on any of these guys.
Yeah, and if they do have that giant spend on a player with the expectation that they're going to turn a club around, it can be incredible, the pressure. I mean, Ben Hunt, I'm sure, felt it when he came to the Dragons as the man who's going to turn that club around.
I think Ash Taylor's felt it at times as well, Tone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Does $1 million tag doesn't sit well with a lot of players, and sometimes be careful what you wish for, because everyone wants that $1 million that seems to be the holy grail, but once you've got it, there's so much expectation comes with it, so much.
Yeah.
Right. You watch, if David Fifita doesn't have a big performance next week, it'll start happening to him. Yep. It'll start happening to all these guys who are on big money. And that goes with the game. That's part of it. When you've got big money, your performances each week have got to be at least an 8 out of 10.
Yeah. We're going to tell more about those player movements. How does, just trying to get my head around how a team can go down 22-0 and their defence being, to my eye, absolutely appalling, to then be close to resolute. There were some attacks from the Titans on Brisbane's try line, which they just repelled and repelled. I mean, that attitude thing within that short space of time, it's bizarre how a coach gets his head around that, wouldn't you think?
You're just watching them grow throughout the whole contest, which was crazy. It was kind of like they were waiting for the pressure to be off, and they were down by 22, and they said, well, we got nothing to lose now, so let's play some footy. And then they dug in for each other. They got some confidence on the back of their attack. And the Titans, if you think about their three wins this year, they've beat the Knights, the Cowboys, and the Broncos earlier on in the season. They've become a side that everyone always talks about their attack, and I think they kind of believe that they can go out there and score more points than the opposition. That'll win you some games throughout the year, but it's not good enough to make you a competitive side with the top echelon of the competition. If your defensive isn't in order, and theirs is far from it, you can beat some sides 40-28, but you come up against the better sides and you need to score 18 points and you need to hold someone out and they can't score 20, you've got some issues.
Yeah, well, no surprises that Justin Holbrook, the Titans coach, wasn't a happy man when he spoke to the media.
Horrible to watch and not defending well. I'm so obvious. I know that everyone knows that. Anyone that watched the game of footy, so it's hard to sit here because I got nothing else to say about it apart from that. You know, I think we're not tackling well enough with 13 men. We actually need 14 men on the field. You know, not 12. you know, it's not one or two people. It's so many of us making the wrong decisions when we don't have the ball. You know, it's not just you know, one or two. We've got to have a look at it. But you know, I feel like I'm back coaching under 20s footy again. You know, the last few weeks it's horrible. But yeah, we've got to look at myself as coach and make sure that we get things right.
What a business coaching an NRL side. Just watching him, his facial movements don't change, but his complexion kind of gets ruddier and ruddier as it goes on.
Is it Kevin Ruddier?
Well, it is. He's having as much success. That just cannot be a happy spot to be in, that coach's box, when that's going on with your side.
No, but to Gerds' point earlier, I think they're in the same situation as the Broncos in terms of their spine and where they're at as a football team. They've recruited well in positions, but the 6, 7, and 9 going forward, I think AJ Brimson's a lock, obviously, at fullback, but they need to bolster that spine as well if they're going to be a threat, because the good football teams, the top four teams, have a good 1, 6, 7, 9.
All right, well, there you go.
You've got a couple of Tanner Boyd and stuff. I thought that they might be the good number nines for them. But, yeah, they need a 5-8. I mean, Ash Taylor, I think this might be his last year at the Gold Coast. And they're missing Bitino Fasua and Malawi as well. He's kind of like he's their pulse, isn't he?
Yeah, indeed he is.
The Triple M Saturday Scrum. The King G. Triple M rocks footy.
Mark Geyer, Ryan Girdler, Michael Tamas, Tony Squires with you on this Saturday afternoon. All the talk of the week has been proposed conference system where we're split into two teams of nine. I'll get the detail in just a moment. And detail seems to be the word, because I did notice Prime Minister Peter Philandes during the week in TV saying, it's just an idea, people. Don't get overexcited. It's just an idea. We don't know. He said some of the detail that had been in the newspapers or in the media, he himself hadn't even seen. I'm not sure how that exactly works.
Bullshit.
Yeah. I'm not sure. So somehow
Bless you.
Not sure how that happens. Now, Michael Chambers, if you could, as one of those, you know, people who are inventing this, obviously, this whole idea, what is the system as it stands so far?
Well, look, they presented to South Sydney. They presented to a few clubs, the NRL. They presented to South Sydney on Tuesday when this story was written. And I spoke to Wayne Bennett after the meeting. Now, Wayne Bennett is one of the big supporters of it. Him and Phil Gould have been pushing this for a little while now. So basically what they want to do, split the competition into two conferences. You got your Sydney conference and your out of Sydney conference, which means you need to add two more teams to the competition. Now, I think we're all assuming that Brisbane's going to enter the competition in 2023. That'll leave a hole. Their talk at the moment is the NRL want to capitalize on that New Zealand market, a second team in New Zealand.
Yep.
At earliest, 2025, we can get there and have an 18-team competition. The problem with that, if you're going to split the competition in half and have a Sydney conference final and a regional conference final, the days of your Sydney grand finals or your rivalry grand finals, even the Cowboys-Broncos, they're gone. And I don't know if
Great rivalries during the season proper, but yeah, not a grand final.
And the way it's been sold is you get three grand finals a year. You get your two conference finals and you get your actual grand final. But do you really care if you're the Sydney conference winner? Don't you just care about winning the big one? I don't know. Maybe I don't mind the idea, but I think once you get to finals time, the conferences need to split over and you get your best teams in the grand final. Yeah. I think that's...
Because, yes, you either want two Sydney teams or you might want Auckland playing Wellington, that other big...
You want the two best teams, Tony.
That's right. Yeah.
No, I think it's just important that you want the two best teams at the end of the year playing in the big dance, regardless of how it looks throughout the season. But if you have, you know, one strong conference, if you go through the table at the moment, there's probably one or two teams out of Sydney at the moment in the top eight.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that side of the conference is obviously, if you did it this year, other than probably Melbourne in there, you would think that the Sydney side of the conference would be a lot stronger. So therefore, you know, you need to make it okay for a couple of the Parramattas, if they get through. Melbourne are obviously going to push up on the other side of the conference and compete against anyone on a big stage. But if, you know, one side of the conference is a little bit weak on and you've got two or three really good Sydney teams, but yet they go and play a weaker side in a grand final, I think it'll take a fair bit of the joy out of that.
Yeah, and you're right, Michael. So therefore, there could be a system where if there were top fours in each, where the number one team in each played the number four team, and you went through that way, and you'd at least, you know, you'd get your best two teams. MG, do you like, love, hate? What do you think?
Oh, look, I think the thing we've learned about Philandes and Abdo is that they love the game. They're passionate about the game, and I love how they leak proposed ideas to the masses and we dissect it, chat about it, and find out if we love, hate, or like it. It's kind of like an expansive subliminal research that the NRL put out there. And I'm with the boys. I think that if you have the top eight sides in the end, I want to see, i.e. Penrith, play Parramatta in a grand final. I want to see Brisbane play Cowboys if they come good in a grand final. I don't want to be denied that chance in this new proposed idea. That's the only thing I can really think about. Look, I don't care about the travel and stuff. I think travel comes with the territory. The teams out of town are used to travelling now. The Canberras, the Melbournes, even Newcastle to a lesser degree. The Warriors, the Cowboys, they're used to travelling. So that's kind of like their, is it a bonus that we don't have to travel as a Sydney teams in the conference? Probably. We're not talking about till 2026. A lot can happen in that time. I just like the fact that we're being proactive with the game. Well, I think always thinking, always trying to change things that at the moment, I don't think the game's broken at all. But I just like the fact that we're introducing new ideas for us to mull around and see if we like them or not.
Yeah. Well, Peter Vellante said that, perhaps it could be, you could mix the conferences up, could be changed from year to year. I don't know, maybe they could be seeded in some way and do it that way. But
he did say that. He said to me, we could rotate the conferences. What's the point of the conference system? Yeah. I don't understand. Yeah. And to be honest with you, you could just tweak the draw now a little bit and make sure you get all the Sydney teams playing each other twice.
Well, which,
it's not that far off.
It's not that far off. Exactly. Yeah. So it's, I don't know if the system's broke, but as we said, the previous administration, the knock on them was that everything was why we couldn't do anything or there were blocks.
Yeah, absolutely. But isn't the core, one of the core issues anyway, and it has nothing really to do with the conference, but it has to do with the expansion. Do we have enough quality players to add another two teams to go into this?
I think that's the problem. Everyone's looking at that as potentially being an issue where I think it's got to be an opportunity.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got to expand the game. The game has to grow. If we stay static, we fall behind. So I think it's smart. I think they're going to release some criteria over the next couple of weeks of what it's going to take to be one of those expansion teams. And if you've got the infrastructure around your junior systems and you have things in place and you have your financials right and you have a good model, well, then you're developing players, and we need the game to develop more players than we do for the game to go, oh, you know what? We don't have enough good players, so we're just going to keep it contained with what we have. So I think if we go to the right areas, we're embraced by, those new communities, hopefully we can get some junior development systems in place that those guys then come through and get to represent their local club. I mean, it's a great story. We need to look for those stories and they need to be our ambitions as opposed to, there's not enough good players. They're out there. We just got to go get them. We've got to develop them.
You're a glass half full kind of guy, aren't you? I love it.
Oh, he's very half full.
He wants to come out of retirement.
Do we think the expansion and divisions and stuff is even a bigger problem than the Country Rugby League at the moment?
Good point.
I know we're going to get to that in a minute after we speak to Dale Finucane and stuff, but I just think at the moment, I saw a story the other day on Noel Cleland, Les Cleland, the Bush, and the Bush, every time you read an article somewhere on Bush footy, another club's died. I just don't think we do enough for them.
No, I don't think that's absolutely true.
The shareholders in our game.
But in defence of the NRL Commission, so I think Peter Vellante is already threw a couple of mil at that problem when he got the email from Noel. Yeah, he got the email from Noel Cleland. But I'm just saying there has been an immediate response, and obviously that needs to be more considered and more research done and how that can get better, because it is a major issue.
Triple M, Saturday Scrum for King G. Triple M rocks footy.
Love it, happy company. Melbourne Storm, too good for the Sharkies. 40 points to 8. And no small part thanks to the man we're about to speak to, co-captain Dale Finucane. G'day, mate.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Very well, thank you. The boy from Bega. We were just talking about country footy. The Bega Roosters, Group 16, are they still going strong?
Yeah, they're still going. I'm actually heading back there after the Souths game next weekend at the local rivalry, Bega Tar, through a grand final from last year, so can't wait to get back for that one.
Love it, love it. Well, would have been good mood in the dressing room post game last night. Half time may have been a little bit different.
Yeah, it was a funny game last night. We were quite ordinary in the first half, and obviously went in down 8-6 at half time, but managed to pile on 34 points in the second half. So Craig was obviously disappointed with our first half, but happy the way we rectified it in the second half.
Lots of ball movement early in that one, Dale, from both sides. They played pretty expansive, the Sharkies.
Yeah, we knew they were going to be a side that shifts a lot. Previewing them through the week, I think they're sort of you know, one of the top three teams in the competition for shifts. So we were aware that that was always going to be the case, and, you know, dropping off their back rollers through the middle. So we'd sort of planned a bit for that. But as I said, we were disappointing in the first half. Some of our defence and, you know, obviously a bit of clunkiness in attack.
Dale, any chance you can kick a goal, mate? Cameron Munster under a little bit of pressure, I imagine, after that performance last night.
I'm a sideline specialist only. There's no pressure from there's no pressure from the sidelines, so I'll take as many of those as they're going to give me, but the close ones, I'm flip a coin.
Well, Christian Welch, your teammate, he wasn't nearly so generous. This is what he had to say last night.
What needs to be improved? I'd think maybe our goal kicking. You'd think maybe if you're on $1 million a year, you can put it through the post, 5 metres from the post. But you know what? He's working on his golf, so I think he's got his priorities right.
I think Craig will have a few words to say at full time.
Well, hopefully he's sacked. I think he's gone. I don't think he can come back from there and happen hours, and hopefully be back next week and we'll forget about Cameron Munster goal kicking.
The funny thing is he can kick the so well at training from the sideline. He'll literally put it not on a tee. He'll sit it on the grass, and he'll kick him from the sideline blindfolded. But when it comes to a game, he's just I don't know if he's too complacent with it or what he's doing. But I'm with Welchie. Sack him.
So one of the real positives about the Melbourne Storm, and there's a lot of them, the fact that now you're breeding young local juniors out of the Melbourne Storm. Last night, young Ira Mia, another one off the production line. That must be really satisfying for you guys when you see a young guy who's born and bred in Melbourne coming through the system and making his first grade debut.
Yeah, it is. It is very humbling. As I said, there's only been four. He's the fourth player to have ever been Victorian born and bred to play for the Melbourne Storm. So he actually had about 50 or 60 people there at the game last night, I think. Oh, so it was such a big occasion for him. And he's one of 13. Yeah, he's got 12 siblings. So obviously his family was there. He had a lot of school teachers that came along to the game as well. So it was really pleasing to see him after the game go over to all those people. And, you know, he was so grateful for everyone coming to support him. But as I said, I sort of got out to the other night to a couple of the young Thunderbolts boys and spoke to them. Tim Glasby, who's obviously retired now, does a lot of the stuff with our Pathways program, and hopefully we'll see a few more coming through in the next few years.
Now, talking about that.
Sorry, Jay,
you go.
I watched the game last week. My young bloke played against the Thunderbolts for the flag for Penrith and against the under-21s for Melbourne. They gave him a good shake. They were very, very strong. That's some good signs for the Melbourne juniors, and I didn't know Tim Glasby had that much to do with. That's great to hear. Fantastic.
Yeah. So Timmy's actually involved up at the Sunshine Coast Falcons. He's based up on the Sunshine Coast, and he obviously deals with our sort of our 20 and under age group, and he sort of nurtures them, and he's bringing those guys through, and he's doing really well with that program.
Yeah, the system's quite incredible, Dale. I mean, and you've been fortunate enough to be down there long enough to go through a couple of different sort of eras, haven't you, with, you know, Cam and Billy and Cooper moving on and having the success that you guys had with them to the new breed of, you know, Munster, Harry Grant and the Block of Cheese. Now, I would imagine, even though the success looks similar on the field, off the field, it would be a different environment created by the new guys as opposed to the old guys.
Yeah, it is different. You know, you spoke about those, you know, the big three, Hoffman, Hinchcliffe, those guys who I was fortunate enough to play with in my early days here at the Storm. You see the sort of the new guys coming through, and it would have been forgiven for thinking that, you know, because that sort of era of players had moved on, that the club might not be successful anymore. But, you know, it's good that we've got, you know, Ryan Pappenhausen, Jerome Hughes, Munster, Brandon and Harry at the moment sort of making up our spine, and hopefully they're, you know, here for a long period of time together. And I'm really excited to see how we can go sort of moving into the future.
Dad, we were talking a little bit earlier about the teams down the bottom of the ladder, and the recruitment and retention's left a lot to be desired. Now, the one thing about Melbourne is they rarely let go of someone they want to keep, and they bring in guys that, you know, young kids, and they thrive under Craig Bellamy. Now, the club's got obviously Ryan Pappenhausen, Harry Grant. There's some kids there. They're going to be a big part of the future. Now, you're off contract at the end of the year. Have you been told where you sit in regards to Melbourne's plans going forward? Because there's a little bit of talk around the Cowboys having some interest in luring you north.
Yeah, I've had a conversation earlier in the year with Frank Panisi in regards to staying at the club. And obviously they would like to keep me at the club moving forward. And You know, for me now, it's just about letting my manager sort of take care of those things sort of behind the scenes. And I sort of didn't really particularly want to have a conversation until we sort of had something to decide that's sitting in front of us. So you're sort of at the moment, I'm sort of, you know, waiting for a term, I guess, and an offer at the moment. So just letting that sort of pan out. Obviously, coming off the back of an injury sort of was a, you know, it was a little bit timely. So hopefully that's happening in the near future.
Talking to Dale Finucane. And Dale, I'm looking at the Daily Telegraph today. It's got a story about several of these clubs, and it goes inside the gym with all the stats of how good each of you are going. Okay, I'll just go through some of the stats here for you, Storm. Fittest is Harry Grant. Fastest, Josh Adokar. No surprises there. Strongest, Nelson Asifa-Solomona.
No,
who would believe? The Telstra Tracker total distance was Cameron Munster, 9.6 Ks against the Warriors. Now, you don't fit, you're not there on the fittest, the fastest, the strongest. Oh, it does say the gym rats at the Storm are Nelson, Jesse Bromwich, and Dale Finucane. So, are these stats generous. Accurate? Yeah, a gym rat, yeah.
Yeah, that's generous. I wouldn't say I'm one of the strongest in there. Yeah, as I said, you got Nelson, you got Felice as well, who's quite strong in the gym. Jesse, they're probably our sort of top three guys, I'd say. But yeah, I'm very thankful for that. Someone's thrown me in there. That's very nice of
we all see the Craig Bellamy that, you know, from the box, who's ranting and raving, and obviously last night a little bit disappointed at the start. And we all then look to some of the people in your side and the characters like Munster and Grant and the like. Now, what's the relationship like between Craig Bellamy and Cam Munster? We know that Craig had a good relationship with Cam Smith, and Cam would often break him down in team talks and whatnot. What's his relationship like with Munster?
Yeah, I don't think it's any secret that Munny's sort of a bit of a rat bag, and he likes to be a bit of a stirrer. So it's funny, I think Craig actually thrives on that, and he enjoys the sort of the banter between the two of them. So it's not uncommon for us to be in a meeting and, you know, something serious to be going on, and Munster to say something stupid and back and forth with Craig. So it's actually quite funny. I think Cameron Smith was actually a little bit the same. He'd sort of, you know, love the banter between him and Craig. So throw Brandon Smith in there as well, and Josh Adokar. They're the guys that like to throw a bit of banter towards Craig, and I think he loves it himself.
It's a good gang, isn't it? It must be fun going to training with those boys.
Yeah, it's good fun. As I said, that's sort of in the meetings and, you know, out in the field, he's more than happy to give it to any of the boys as well.
Well, whatever the dynamic, it is working, has been working for 1,000 years. We'll continue to work for the Storm. Dale Finucane, thanks so much for having a chat. Really appreciate it, mate.
No worries, boys. Thanks for having me on.
See you, brother.
Bush footy, it's struggling. Noel Cleal sent an email to Peter Vallandis, also appeared in the newspapers this week talking about the struggles of many towns that had great footy teams, first, seconds, thirds. Warialda, I think it has produced two internationals, no longer has a rugby league team. I mean, it's been kept alive by Maroon and his call, talking about anybody from the Grafton Ghosts or wherever they are from, which is brilliant. But it's such a sad thing, MG, the notion of this great feeder, but also the passion of the people in those places. Now, it's not just those who are running out and having a game of footy. It's those who gather every weekend to see, or every second weekend, to see their local side run out and play a game of rugby league, and they're not getting that opportunity.
Well, when 51% of the NRL players come from the country, we don't do enough. I don't know whether we have to go back to the, you know, the fixtures of the city country matches and play, or do we just give every club a group and they concentrate on that one group each year and they play one of their home games there? Like Penrith are today against Manly, they play at least one game a year at Bathurst. I think South play at Dubbo. We saw, was it St George take their game, or was it Titans game at Mudgee just recently? So, yep. I don't know why we all don't do it. I know the country regions are just dying. The players, the clubs are just falling apart. And I just think it's a bigger issue in the game than trying to get two divisions or two different systems or, you know, operating as we go further in the game. I just think it's a big problem. We've got to sit down and have, with the head brokers, and I don't even know who's the boss anymore. I know Chris Quinn used to be the boss of Country Rugby League, but they just haven't got a mouth anymore. They haven't got a voice.
It's a problem, isn't it? And it's one I think it is being slightly, and as you mentioned, the notion that each club could take on almost like a sister city, but a sister club, and they then go and play there. They may, you know, may help with gear or whatever it is, or visits, and for the kids who are in that area, it's an important thing.
I think Penrith have the model right. What they've done in Bathurst is the blueprint going forward. They don't just go and take a game there every year. They have a program set up there. They have kids coming through the system where they it's not just about coming there, playing a game and walking out and saying, thanks for everything, thanks for the money, and we're out. So I think that system needs to be adopted by all 16 teams with a different region. I think that's definitely the way forward. But I also think that perhaps this is not just a country rugby league issue. I think there's an issue across the game with participation. I got some numbers from Penrith in regards to their junior league. Now, the fact that there's such a big nursery, a drop, you don't feel it as much because you've still got enough teams there. We're in the country, there aren't a lot of people, so you obviously feel it. And the numbers here from 16-year-old kids, 16-year-old and up, the numbers 5 years ago or 6 years ago, they had 2,300 registered people above the age of 16.
Is this in the Penrith
League?
That's
in the Penrith League. That's dropped to 1,700 in 6 years. There's a drop. The numbers from four upwards till about the age of 16 have been steady and sort of fluctuating slightly. But we get to that age now where 16 and kids are losing interest in playing rugby league at that point. Is there a reason why, Gerds?
And is that why a lot of the countrysides are struggling and the clubs are struggling, because registration fees just aren't being paid because there's not enough participation?
Well, I think that's
like
part of it.
We can talk about investment from the rugby league, but we also need to understand that, you know, how do we get these kids back into wanting to play the game, to make sure that the registration's there so that then these, you know, community-based clubs can put tides in every year.
Yeah, well, Kenty in his column today, and I'm sure he'll talk about it on the station tomorrow afternoon, he's talking about Craig Bellamy, who I think might have had a connection with Lithgow, and kind of that light bulb moment when he was going towards Lithgow and there were two AFL fields. I mean, so the competition for those people, and it's not just, obviously, it's across the board, isn't it? The competition for, and, you know, juniors is intense. So it can be difficult, MG.
Well, I don't even think of it. Yeah, look, I know the AFL do grassroots very well. I know, and they've got to, because, you know, they're kind of like the, you know, Melbourne Storm in Melbourne. They do the same thing. Melbourne do very well with their pathways and getting young kids to play. But obviously, it's an AFL-dominated city. Like, we're here in New South Wales, we're NRL-dominated. And I don't think... Look, I think the both codes can coexist. I think there's a deeper problem. I think there's more of a problem of it's a financial problem. It's allocation where they are. It's kind of out of sight, out of mind. So that, you know, they're out of Group 10. We don't, you know, then all of a sudden we see a report that, you know, they've lost five clubs in a decade, and you go, well, okay, well, when are we going to do something about it? When are we going to stop this pathways that we get from the Country Rugby League? When are we going to stop that from hemorrhaging? When are we going to stop that? When are we going to sit down and go, okay, what's number one in our game that we need to fix? And there's a lot of things. We've added rules. We want two different conferences. We want to do this. We want to do that. But number one is Country Rugby League for mine. The Country Rugby League give us so much. They've given us our game so much over 100 seasons. And now that they need our help. They need our help bad. And I think we've got to really take it seriously.
MJ, the Country Rugby League have merged with the New South Wales Rugby League. I feel as though the New South Wales Rugby League, over the years, the focus on origin has become too intense, and they've sort of forgotten the other side of the role, which is the juniors coming through. And I feel, you know, we can point the finger at the NRL, which is obviously part of the reason in regards to where that money is going. But the New South Wales Rugby League have a bigger job to do than just sell origin tickets and focus on winning origin series. That falls under their banner. And hopefully going forward, together with the NRL, they come up with a plan to try and turn things back the way they were.
Oh, let's just go back to the good old days when blokes from the Country Rugby League would play in State of Origin. Phil Duke would get picked.
You know, Nick
Cronin from Gerringong. When he was playing,
you know what you do, don't you? You know what you do for the, maybe instead of these conferences and stuff, we bring back the midweeks cup competition.
Oh, the MCO Cup.
MCO Cup. 1974, Western Division against Penrith. Come on.
Good.
Come on. Let's bring Ted Ellery back.
TV Ted Ellery.
TV Ted.
But all of the city clubs now, and it's like all of that in professional sport, you see it everywhere in every code. If a good guy's, you know, 12 and 13 and 14 and he's identified at that age, he's brought into a Sydney system already,
right,
isn't he?
Yep.
That's so right. How do you keep those guys in those country areas and keep the clubs that are looking to turn this young guy into a potential first grader at some point with their hands off?
There's a really good point you made, Gers, because what Mick said before is about Penrith and Bathurst is perfect, because most of Penrith's Harold Matthews, SG Ball, Jersey Flegg come from Group 10. And you know why they're coming from Group 10? Because they're seeing them once a year in the flesh. They're seeing Penrith go out to Bathurst. They're seeing them out there for the 2 or 3 days before the game in the schools. And it's starting to catch on. All these young kids are going, you know what? I've got an opportunity. I can go and play first grade with Penrith. They're coming out here. So imagine if South keep going to Dubbo and these young kids from Dubbo, and if the Dragons go to Mudgee, and if the Titans go to, you know, some up there where they've got some country teams as well. I'm sure even the Warriors must have a country region where they can go to and start up in the ante as well. Every club should be allocated, as Chamo said, every club in the NRL should be allocated a group that they take care of. And you say, okay, you're a brother or sister club. We're going to make sure that we come to you every year, but we're going to do more than that. We're going to come a couple of days early. We're going to set up clinics. And those kids who come through and thinking about playing or going to another sport, I'll think about us first.
Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.